You're listening to Swarmcast, the Scarab Gaming Convention podcast. Scarab is the South Carolina Anime, Role-Playing, and Board Gaming Convention in Columbia, South Carolina. In addition to the annual convention, the members of Scarab, also known as the Scarab Swarm, travel to retailers, conventions, and meetups to demo a variety of games. In this podcast, we highlight topics such as gaming, conventions, the people behind it all, and more. I'm your host, John Manus, and this is the Swarmcast. Wow, I can't believe they actually... Oh, mic's on. Okay, hey, welcome to the first episode of Scarab Swarmcast. I'm your host, John Manus. Gosh, the first episode, what should we do for the first episode? I know. I'll talk to Del Collins. He's the director of Scarab. He's going to give us some information on Scarab. Well, you know, he's going to tell us the true, deep, dark, secret origin of Scarab, as it were. He's probably got a few extra stories. Maybe I can get some of those out of him, too. I'm going to go over some news about Scarab, some interesting stuff going on. I'm going to go over the calendar of events so you guys can know where to go find Scarab. And heck, even if you don't find them there, you just have yourself a good time. And let's see, and then at the end, I've got a little bit of something I'm going to call a buzz, something I want to buzz about, something important having to do with Scarab, oddly enough, but I think it kind of also serves my own personal agenda, if I do say so. But yeah, so let's get right on into things. I'm going to go over here, and we're going to read off some news. So here's some news about Scarab. They're going into their fourth year. And as anybody who's been there before knows, they used to be in the Scottish Rite Center. In 2014, they're going to be moving into the Medallion Convention Center, which is right across the street from the Scottish Rite Center. In addition to that, they've got a deal with the Holiday Inn Express, Fort Jackson. The room rates for the King's Double and Suites are $69, $79, and $89 a night. The other big news for the Scarab Gaming Convention is the addition of the Anime Track. With that's going to come a lot of other events. There's going to be some cosplay. What anime convention would be complete without actually showing some anime? And I know that those ladies involved there have got a few other surprises that they're going to announce soon or within the coming months. Finally, some other news for Scarab. There's conventions and events popping up constantly. You'll definitely want to check the website to see a more accurate listing of the conventions and event. They're constantly announcing on Facebook when these new events are popping up as well. And speaking of events, you're probably wondering right now, well, where am I going to be able to find the Scarab Swarm? Well, in the month of April, April 6th, they're going to be at the Augusta Book Exchange in Augusta, Georgia, from noon to 11 p.m. I know they're going to be bringing some Pathfinder Society, and there's probably going to be some board games and a few other games that you can play there as well. April 19th through 21st, they're going to be in Savannah, Georgia, at GnomeCon for that whole weekend. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with GnomeCon, and this is kind of from their website right here, they are a group of gamers and science fiction and fantasy fans who decided that they needed a convention a little bit closer to home. They're fans of gnomes as well, and they know how not to fall under the spell of elves. You got to be careful about them elves. They dream about dice and games and game tiles and wonder how they will ever make it through the elusive dungeon of their dreams. Yeah, so, you know, if you're into that kind of thing. No, seriously, it looks like it should be a lot of fun and some warm gaming and some other games. Heck, Scarab's going to be there, bring in the Pathfinder Society, and there's going to be some other role-playing games and some other board games and such there, too. So check that out, definitely. Now for the month of May, May 4th, from 10 a.m. to 1 a.m. in Asheville, North Carolina, is going to be Geek Out. Side Geek Out is Western North Carolina's annual popular arts convention, celebration of film, art, costuming, comics, and animation in the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains, which apparently is the home of the Hunger Games. Geek Out is a one-day show that draws fans from across the Southeast. It's going to feature multiple tracks of programming, panels, gaming, and a full performance schedule, celebrity guests, and an exhibition hall for vendors and artists. Sounds like it's going to be one heck of a day. May 17th through 19th, you can find the Scarab Swarm at XCon World in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This thing should be huge. It's a whole weekend event. There's a lot of celebrity guests going to be there. If you're a fan of the Walking Dead series, there's going to be quite a few cast members at XCon. And of course, you know, there's going to be some gaming, and I think somebody's probably going to be running a game about kobolds there. May 31st through June 2nd, the Scarab Swarm will be at Con Carolinas for the entire weekend in Charlotte, North Carolina. Con Carolinas is a general multi-genre, multimedia convention. They cover all sorts of speculative fiction, science fiction, fantasy, horror. It hosts a variety of fandom-related events and guests, including gaming, discussion panels, costume events, music, events like Klingon karaoke, charity auctions, SCA events, fan groups like the 501st Legion, Starfleet, and Klingon Assault Group. It's something a little different every year. Well, those are just a few places you're going to be able to find the Scarab Swarm in the month of April and May. Check the website, it's always getting updated with future events. And be on the lookout for updates on Facebook as well.
Meanwhile.
Alright, now it's time to meet the Swarm. On today's Meet the Swarm, I'm going to interview Del Collins. Okay, now it's time to meet one of the members of the Scarab Swarm. Tell me who you are, and what is your role in Scarab?
It's good to be here. My name is Del Collins, and I am the director of Scarab.
How did you get involved in Scarab? Or what? I guess you're the director, so how did you form Scarab?
Well, the the Scarab got started really in 2009 is when we really first decided that we were going to do this type of thing. It was born out of a trip to Gen Con but with myself, Randy Miller, and Kenetha Miller. And on the way back from that trip, we decided we were interested in doing something. And so by the end of 2009, we had decided, the group that is Scarab decided that we were going to do this. And so our intention was to have the very first Scarab in 2010, in January of that year. Another convention conflicted with that, so we decided to wait and not step on anyone's toes. We were going to then move it to October. Well, that gave us time to focus group. So we hired a company, they focus grouped and said, the best time to do a convention in the South is in the dead of winter. So we said, well, then we're going to wait on October and we're going to go to January, and other convention be damned, we're going to do it. So that's how Scarab got put in January on Martin Luther King weekend. So that's kind of how Scarab got to where it's at on what day, and what caused it to come into being was simply that we, the members of Scarab, really in the decades that we had been in gaming and enjoying the hobby of gaming, we had been to tons of conventions. And so all the conventions that we had attended had something about them that was great and something that just wasn't so great. You know, you always find something that's not, you know, oh, that could have been better. So we decided in talking about it that we wanted to do a convention that we would want to go to, that we would really enjoy. If we were guests of this convention, that we would really enjoy. And so we really thought about it and thought hard about it, the things that we liked about other conventions, the things that we didn't like about other conventions, and came up with a format for Scarab that we believed, whether or not anyone else came, that if we were sitting around the convention entertaining ourselves the entire weekend, that we were going to have fun. And our first projection for Scarab 1, which was in 2011, we wanted 40 people. That's what we needed to come. And if we had 40 people attend, we were going to do a Scarab 2.
Oh, wow.
So we had 200 people come to Scarab 1. And we said, you know, and when we started it, we put together a 5-year plan. So we knew that we needed where we needed to be in 5 years with Scarab. We achieved our attendance goals for the 5-year plan in 3 years. So we're really, really excited about what's coming with Scarab. So that's the history. That's at least a little bit of the history of Scarab and how it got started and why it's when it is.
That's pretty cool, because I know that the way I really first heard about Scarab was just from seeing you guys at all these different conventions and stuff. And I know normally when I've gone to different conventions, if I see another convention being represented, at one of those conventions, it's usually because they have just a guest booth or something where they're saying, hey, come to my convention, it's in this place and this time. But with Scarab, you guys weren't just there doing that. You were also going, you were running stuff for the other conventions. And
right.
I think, to me, that's kind of what separates, one of the things that separates Scarab from a lot of other conventions.
Correct.
Because you guys, you don't just go there to show up to promote your own convention. You go there to run things and to just get involved in.
Well, and that really is the heart of Scarab is that, and it's funny that you say that because, well, let me finish with the heart of Scarab. The heart of Scarab really is that we wanted to find a way to finance our love for the hobby. So we were going to go to these conventions no matter what. And so ultimately what it boiled down to was it'd be really cool if we had a way to go to these other conventions, but then finance that some way that, you know, we're not spending $10,000 a year per person to go to a convention to show off the games for the hobby that we love. And so we thought, well, if we get lucky, you know, Scarab might be able to pay our way. And so it's been an amazing journey the first 4 years, and that's really what Scarab was, the intent of Scarab as a group was that we were going to bring the hobby into not just other conventions, but into other areas. And so, you know, we've been to retirement communities, we've been to all kinds of areas. The YMCA, we've done events at the YMCA for underprivileged kids. We've gone into schools and into libraries. We've helped different school districts set up gaming hobby programs. We have several charities that we also donate to as well that we do work for. So we do charity events and things like that. Those are things we don't charge for any of that. We don't ask people to pay for us to show up or do any of that. We spend our own money on that. So Scarab started out in financing that. As a side note to that, we've heard a tremendous amount from the people within the gaming community that one of the side effects that Scarab is having is unifying a gaming community. Well, that was never our intent. I mean, it's a cool side effect, but we really, really didn't mean for that to happen. It was unexpected as well. But it's been amazing to see how many people now from Myrtle Beach to Savannah to Asheville are now communicating with one another and really synchronizing the gaming community with what's going on. You know, when we started out, we ran into this thing where we were running up against another convention. So we were debating, do we launch, do we not launch, things like that. Well, now it's amazing how the conventions are working together, how the retailers are even working together. I mean, we have retailers that come to convention and they communicate with one another, not just for our event, but all year long to find out what's going on. So it's been really cool that a community has really begun to develop around what we do. And we're the only company that does what we do. We've never seen anyone do this, so it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It's been interesting to see from my perspective, to see all that kind of
stuff out
there. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the different retailers and such. The
mm-hmm.
And because usually when you see game designers, they might send somebody to demo something at a convention.
Correct.
And that'd be about it. But it definitely seems to have a very different feel to it with Scarab. And I kind of like that. And I personally, I would like to see that grow a lot more. And it looks like it is with some of these companies.
Like
the people who do Time Warriors, for example.
Correct. Time Warriors. Chaotic Connections was a really good one for us. Windfall last year. It didn't work out so good for them, but the reality of it is, I guess it kind of did because they asked for feedback from what was happening, found out they had a game that was not fun to play, and now they've been able to go back and tweak it and make some changes. So there are companies, that's part of what we do. That's how we have so many sponsors. We give feedback to our sponsors. We don't just take their games and walk away with them. We give them feedback, and we give them honest feedback. You know, I've known a lot of game companies that in the past they give out demo copies to people, and you talk to the people that are demoing them, and they'll tell you, well, as long as I'm giving them good news, I'm going to get more demo copies. What we've learned is, so long as you're being honest, whether it's good news or bad, you will get more demo copies, and you'll get more demo copies being honest than you will by just overinflating how great the game was or what a great time everybody had playing it. And because of that, we've had different game manufacturers actually travel with us. So the guys from Chaotic Connections were traveling with us. We've had to come to different events with us. We've done the Time Warriors thing. And so those are just some great examples of of what we're doing with some sponsors and with how we demo is and how it's a little bit different in the way that we demo versus other people.
Yeah, it's almost like with a rock band or something. Scarab's going on tour with...
Funny story about that, which a lot of people may not realize. We went to Geek Out last year in Asheville. Go Geek Out.
Oh, wow.
And go Asheville Pathfinder Society. So we went to a Geek Out last year, and we walk in, and there's a guy in Darth Vader outfit, and there's a Chewbacca walking through the lobby, you know. And I left the kids watching the truck, and I'm going to go in to get a cart from the bellhop. So I go up to the bellhop and tell him, you know, hey, I need a cart. He says, well, and this is at the Renaissance or whatever it's called downtown Asheville. They're real swanky type hotel. Well, sir, we don't give out carts, but I'll come get it for you. And I told him, man, we got a lot. I mean, you've seen what we travel with, right, John? So it's a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm like, we got a lot. I hate for you to carry all this in, you know. He's like, no, that's my job, sir. I'm happy to do it. So he comes out, and we load up two of these carts, and we're coming in, and he's looking around. There's a Princess Leia walking around, stormtroopers, and there's some actors and stuff like that, and they've got the Dukes of Hazzard car and all this different stuff there. He's like, man, so you guys have all this stuff. Are you famous? And I said, no, not really. We just come up and run games. And so he wheels us into the gaming hall, and we're all wearing our Scarab shirts. And when he did, the place just, it was like a riot. People were jumping up and down, screaming, Scarab's here, yeah! And it was amazing, the response we got. And he looked at us and he goes, I thought you said you weren't famous. And I went, well, I guess we kind of are. And really that is the reaction that we get at a lot of places when we come in. The energy level really goes up. You know, sometimes I feel like it's Mardi Gras because we walk in places and we're throwing dice, and you know, I mean, aside from girls ripping their shirts off, you know, it's got this real Mardi Gras feel to the energy of it that people really respond to it. That was amazing. It was really amazing. So,
not to put a personal plug in, but that's almost the reaction like I get when I bring my Kobolds game to a table of people.
Oh yeah. That thing's hugely popular, right? The Kobolds Ate My Baby, which stems from the 3.0 edition of D&D when you were running Kobolds at different events in the area.
It actually stems from when I used to run 2nd edition, for way back in 2nd edition D&D. Because in 2nd edition, Kobolds were just little things that you just I need to get to level 2. Boom, let me beat up like 15 of these. Yay, I've leveled up.
Right.
And then, which each edition of D&D, I've had to remake those suckers over and over.
Yeah, because people love those things.
Yeah.
People love those.
But then the problem came with like 3.5 when they said, oh, well, since they're kind of dragons, we'll make them really powerful and crazy. And it's just not fun anymore.
Gotcha.
But fortunately, I found that Kobolds Ate My Baby game.
Right.
They said, no, let's push them back down to the... even further down to the level. They're definitely
right.
Now.
Right.
But yeah, that was more about me.
Exactly. Well,
fine because.
But you, in full disclosure, you are a part of Scarab, right?
Yes, that's true.
So okay.
And honestly, any chance that I get to plug that game, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, and that's a great game.
It's a fun game.
It is. It's a great game.
But that's why I bring it to every convention I go to.
Oh yeah, it's like Toon. When Pekowski shows up to run Toon, man, people.
Oh yeah, his Toon games.
People are lining up to play in that thing. He does that the race,
his wacky races.
Wacky races.
Goob's
that's
wacky
it.
Races.
Man, and he people just line up for that, and they remember it from year to year.
Right, because I remember years and years and years ago, probably back when I was running the 2nd edition version of Kobolds, just Brian Gambrell coming in, going. All right, everybody, I need to make an announcement, please. And it was an announcement about the winner of one of the wacky races.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they were playing the Imperial March and all that stuff with the cell phones. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's got that same effect. There's certain games that are like that.
Right. Yeah. Since we're talking about games, what got you into gaming?
Well, D&D got me into gaming, and
that tends to happen with people.
Yeah, the year was 1978, and my mother took me to a joke shop. My brother and I to a joke shop. My brother, who was he was much older than I was. I was 8 at the time, and my brother was in his 20s. And so we went to this joke shop. If I remember correctly, it was around Halloween. They were looking for costumes or something like that. In the front of the joke shop, they had a glass display case, and they had a monster manual sitting there. The blue monster manual with the red dragon on front. They didn't have the red box set or any of the other stuff. And so they had this thing sitting there, and I was just fascinated by that book. I couldn't stop looking at that book. And so the guy behind the counter said, "Do you want to look at it?" I'm like, "Sure." So he hands me the book. I start looking through it. I realized instantly that it was to a game of some kind. So he started telling me about it. So I begged my mom. I'm like, "I want that book. I want that book." So, and he had told her, "He might be a little too young for it." So he recommended getting the basic box set. Well, we couldn't find it anywhere. We couldn't find the basic set anywhere. Everyone tells you, "I started with that old red set." Well, I couldn't find it. We couldn't find it. So my mom eventually broke down and bought me the DM's Guide, the Player's Handbook, and the Monster Manual for first ed.
Wow.
And along with that, she bought me at the same time the Deities and Demigods book, the one that had the Cthulhu and the...
Oh, wow.
At the same time. So that's how...
That's a great...
That's when I got started. I was handed those four books and made to decipher that rule set at 8. So, I was on my own.
Right.
So I had to decipher all that. Well, by the time I was 9, I had actually started corresponding, I mean, that's before email, obviously, with TSR and writing. So I was writing letters back and forth to TSR, and they were answering me. And the guy that was answering me was this guy named Gary. And I didn't know who that was. You know, it didn't occur to me that it was Gary Gygax. And so the guy that was replying to my letters, helping me interpret these rules, was this guy named, to me, his name was just Gary. And so in 1980, I went to Gen Con for the first time and met Gary. And he was just the coolest guy on the planet. You know what I mean? And it still never occurred to me who he was. Wow. until later on when I was a teenager and realized, man, that guy that's been writing me all those letters, his name is on all these books. So that's how I got started in gaming, was playing that. And then the next game that I found was Battletech, which is I love Battletech. It's my all-time favorite game ever.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask you what your favorite was.
Battletech. I love Battletech. Yeah, I'm a Battletech freak. As far as role-playing games go, I have to admit, I really love the Weird West. I love that setting. I'm a Western kind of guy, so I love the Weird West. And I love what Pathfinder. I love what Paizo's done with D&D. It really is a good system.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So I do love that system. It's not my favorite system, but yeah, man, it's clean. I mean, talk about a clean rule set.
Yeah,
that is a clean rule set. I mean, I really, really have enjoyed that. My daughter, who is 12, is running Pathfinder, and I don't think I was running AD&D at the age of 12 as well as she is running Pathfinder at the age of 12. You know what I mean? It's and AD&D, honestly, when you look at it, had significantly less rules than Pathfinder had, because there were no feats, there were no traits, there were no... It was you had to die 20, you needed to roll to hit and combat, and the rest of it was all role play.
Yeah.
Now there's traits and feats and everything else, and prestige classes and this, that, and archetypes and the other stuff.
Yeah.
Man, it's amazing how fast my daughter picked it up. Now, maybe she's just a whole lot smarter than I was. I don't know. But that system is really clean. I got no complaints about that system at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Savage Worlds is a big thing out.
Yeah. You know, love. I mean, I think
it's a similar... You mentioned the Weird West.
Weird West is definitely my favorite setting, I think, of all time is the Weird West. That was... I've never seen that until I came here to South Carolina and was instantly addicted to that system. That I love that world.
And I found out about it when I was living in Charleston at the time, and I'd been running this Shadowrun game, this second edition, third edition, kind of around that time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been running that for years, and I was kind of getting just burnt out on it. And I was like, I need something different. And I just remember walking into the store, finding the original, just the orange
Orange book.
The Orange Deadlands book, yep. Picking that up, and I was like, well, I like cowboys, and this is cowboys, but this is so much more than that.
Yeah, oh yeah, big time. Yeah, like, you can recognize that book across a room.
Oh yeah.
You know, that was a great book.
And it was funny, because just like you mentioned how you were corresponding with this guy named Gary, mm-hmm. for D&D, there were several times when I'd email Pinnacle Inc. and I'd be like, oh, I'm kind of confused about this rule, and some dude named Shane would send me back some answer.
Get back with you? Yeah.
And it honestly didn't hit me until, I guess it was last year, when I was at a convention where Shane actually was, and because he actually signed my book, that I realized, wait a minute, you're the guy who answered all those crazy questions I
had. Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, name another hobby where the gods of the hobby, so to speak, you know, the Jason Bowmans right. of the world, or the Mark Morlands of the world, or you know, those types of guys, the Shane Hensleys of the world, you know, actually correspond with their fans in that fashion. I mean, they literally meet with them one-on-one. I mean, there's not a lot of places you go to do that. I mean, you don't right. do it, not in NASCAR, not in the NFL. I mean, you know, you can be a sports buff, but you don't get to go meet all your favorite sports stars. That just doesn't happen, and you don't get right. to correspond with them like that, you know. So.
And then you have Clint Black, who shows up to Scarborough.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But I guess almost every convention I end up going to, he's there somehow.
Yeah, I mean, Clint's, it's cool, because Clint's like an old friend. You see him everywhere you go. Right. And he's just one of the most down-to-earth guys we've ever met. So,
and oddly, the first time I met him, I was running a Deadlands game at it was either Con Carolinas or Mace. It was one of those non-Scaraby conventions.
Right, right.
Right. But I was running it, and it was a Saturday night, and then this woman came up to me and said, hey, we found out that you're running a Savage Worlds game on Saturday night, so now you're part of this Savage Saturday Night thing. I was like, right. Oh, I am.
Roped in.
And it turned out that was Jody Black. And right. Yeah, I didn't know who she was. I'm like, oh, okay. So I was a little nervous. And then this guy came over. He's like, well, normally I'm running this game, but I'm not running a game this night for some reason, so I'm going to play. And that was Clint Black. And I'm like,
that's cool.
So like, so the first time I met Clint Black was when I was running Deadlands for him.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, at least you know he's going to correct you on the rules, right?
Oh, he didn't. He didn't correct me on any rules. That's not to say that I got him all correct. It's just... He knows how the system is. He's like, yeah, whatever, go
yeah.
with it.
He's just laid back. Yeah, that's yeah, exactly.
And I was like, I feel bad because this Texas Rattler's eating their steam wagon, or no, it wasn't a steam wagon, their wagon. And he said, no, this is great. Teleported inside of it and beat it up.
I went to lunch with Gambrell and Pekowski today and told them I want someone to run Necessary Evil. Darn it, for Con Carolina, so. I want to try and schedule. I want to play some Necessary Evil. I've owned the book forever.
See,
and I'm dying to play the system.
I just got their Superpowers Companion, and I've been looking at Necessary Evil, going because I am a sucker for a superheroes game.
Yeah,
and I've tried to run a lot of them, and a lot of them are just fizzled because it just hasn't found the right system yet.
Yeah. Oh yeah, big time. Right now, the fans ask for Pathfinder. Wherever we go, everybody's asking for Pathfinder. The other thing that we get asked for, probably the second most of anything else, is Deadlands. We get asked for tons and tons of Savage Worlds or Deadlands type stuff. It's really anything Savage Worlds. So that's probably our number two. And you know, somewhere way down there are things like Shadowrun, and then D&D is probably at the bottom.
Yeah. And one of the bigger, I guess it's just this shy of still being indie, is the Dresden Files.
That's huge, game. Too. That's hot.
Because I remember the year it came out, we were at some convention, and all of our friends who were running games were just sitting at tables by themselves. And we're like, what happened? And I was like, the big D hit. And
is that
it
right?
took all my players.
Yeah, wow. You know, that's, we don't get a lot of requests for Dresden, but when we put Dresden on the schedule... They fill.
Of course.
Everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, we could pimp Miles. Miles, who is our Dresden guy, I mean, we could pimp him out every week if we wanted to. That guy, he's really our main Dresden GM, and he's a huge fan of the books, too. So that
helps out.
Yeah, that helps immensely. I think he made a special trip to Tennessee last year, year four, to go see Butcher, you know, to go see the author.
Oh, wow.
And get a bunch of autographs. I don't know how many books he got him to autograph, but I know he got him to autograph several books and brought them back, and we gave him away as prizes. People were just thrilled to get them.
Oh, I bet.
But, yeah, that's a system that we don't get a lot of requests for, but when if I put five slots of that on a schedule, every one of them will fill. Everyone. That is one of those systems that's really got a huge following. And Cthulhu's the same way. We don't get requests for Cthulhu. They don't come in. But if I put five slots of Cthulhu on it, everyone will fill up. Everyone will fill. People just, there's certain settings that lend themselves to a convention that people just go kind of nuts for.
Well, and sometimes it's hard to. Sometimes you just don't know, though.
That's all right. Yeah.
Because I remember going to a convention once, and the Dresden Files, the Dresden games weren't filling up for some reason, which seemed really weird to me.
Yeah.
There's been times when, like, I'm a really big fan of the game Paranoia.
Yes.
And every time I played it at convention, it was always, you know, waiting list. Oh, I hope I get into it. You know, because it was just so much fun. And then the past, well, maybe not last year, but the past few times that I tried to run it, I would get one person to sign up for it. It would be like a friend of mine who came with me to the convention. It's like, well, you don't count because you came with me.
Right. Yeah, and Paranoia is one of those games, too, that, I mean, it lends itself to a one-shot. You know, that is a convention-based game. That was when I was little, and started going to conventions. The first convention I ever went to was ManCon in Houston, Texas. And run by Frank Nanny and the guys at Nan's Game Headquarters in Houston, Texas. But I would go to NanCon, and I would sign up to play D&D and Paranoia. That was my thing. I'd play D&D and I'd play Paranoia, and the best thing about Paranoia was getting killed seven times. You know, that was the best thing about that game was, could you invent another or crazier way to die?
Wow, that's pretty much my first gaming convention kind of background right there, too. D&D, Paranoia.
Yeah, but, I mean, I tell you, back in the day, there weren't... The selection of RPGs nowadays is amazing, but back in the day, there was a few out, and I remember when the vampire game came to NanCon. That was amazing. There are all these people running around, and there's this new thing called a LARP, and you were actually going to play your character and be your character for the convention. And you know, gamers were looking at these guys like, "Wow, they're weird." And you know, it was kind of one of those, "Wow, you gamers actually think someone else is weird? That's kind of strange." And then that's kind of progressed now, you know.
Well, you've already told me quite a few interesting convention stories, so. I don't think I need to ask you too much more about that. Unless you have some other convention story that just kind of was like...
So, now, I don't have this... the guy to ask about the convention story is Gambrel and the nun story. The nun story is going to go down in history. But I do have one...
I'll make a note of that right now.
One funny convention story. So, Battletech was my favorite game. I won the first ever clan blood name. At Gen Con, that was in 92, I guess, 91 or 92. That was the first year the clans had come out, and they did the clan blood name. They had this big tournament. So I won that tournament that year. I was 21. We're playing this tournament, and how it happened first was someone comes in and says, we need someone to come help this guy get out of his car. And so all these guys go out to the parking lot and help this guy get out of a cab. And so he comes in, and he's wearing a medical gown, and he's got an IV on a little roller thing, and he's there to play in that Battletech tournament because he really, really wanted to win that tournament. So he had to borrow dice and everything. And so he was waiting on surgery for something. And so he's standing around the Battletech room in a gown, bare ass naked, tied in the back with an IV thing into his arm, and about 4 hours went by and he got eliminated in round one. And so they call the guy a cab. They're like, man, you got to go. And so they put his ass back in a cab and sent him back to the hospital there in Wisconsin, there in Lake Geneva, where we were at. So, yeah. Or in, no, that wasn't Lake Geneva. That was in Milwaukee. That's where we were at. We were in Milwaukee there. They put him in, they put him back in his cab and sent him on down the road. That's my only funny, my really funny story that I got. I've never seen anything like that before or since. So he really wanted to play some Battletech.
Yeah. This shows gamers are hardcore. Do you have any interesting kind of things, interesting things planned or in the works for the next Scarab that you can tell us about right now?
Well, the Widow's Track, we got it off the ground, and that was that's been something we've been waiting 3 years to do. We weren't sure how well that received that was going to be. Mm-hmm. And we feel like now that we've gotten it off the ground, we have an idea of how we have tested it. You know, we've tested the waters with it, I guess. I think that's going to be huge. I think going forward, the Widow's Track is going to be a big deal. That is something that lets gaming widows come into Scarab and pick up some craft skills. Cross stitching, which Ruby's sitting here doing, and you know, they had knitting and different sewing, crochet. Kenetha is the chainmail master. I mean, she can make anything out of chainmail, and they've got jewelry and henna tattooing, and they can do cake decorating, you know. So, and we've got some award winning talent in our Widow's Track.
Oh, definitely.
You know, Maggie can, good Lord, Maggie can sew anything. She is a really a fantastic seamstress. Christy is a, you know, purple ribbon winner for cross stitch with the South Carolina Fair here. So that, I think the Widow's Track is going to be a really, really cool event this year. And then, of course, we're bringing up the Anime Track, which is something that we had originally planned in year five. So year six would have been when that would have come out in the, that would have been the 2016 convention. But we're actually so far ahead of schedule that we're bringing that up now in 2014. And I really think, and that's, and again, it's something that we're going to launch. We're going to see how it goes. And one of the things that we've always said with Scarab is we're never going to be afraid to change. We've seen too many conventions fear change that, man, we launched something, it didn't go well, but you know what? Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. Even though we're kind of going off a cliff with this, we're going to just keep running with it. Well, we're never going to do that with Scarab. If we do something and we screw it up, we're going to fix it. If it's something that we really want to do, we're going to fix it. If we screw it up so bad that everyone decides we never want to do that again, well, then we just won't do it. You know, but one of the things that we're not going to be afraid to do is change. And, you know, if you've ever looked at our forums or our Facebook or anywhere where we're posting publicly, we never shy away from tackling negative feedback head on. We want to know the good, the bad, and the ugly of Scarab. If there was something that we did right, we want to do it even better. If there's something that we did and it was just okay, and there's a way, and people have a way or a suggestion to make something better, we want to do that. If we've done something and we've messed it up, and people want that, there's a demand for it, and we need to fix it, we'll find a way to fix it. And so now, with the Anime Track, we're just really excited to launch that and to start getting feedback on it. With the Widow's Track, we got some really good feedback on the Widow's Track as far as what people want, what they want to see. We were really nervous that we were going to be charging, you know, for our Widow's Track separately because the supplies are expensive. So beyond a badge, to have someone, you know, say, well, it's going to cost you an extra $5 to get the supplies for this thing, but you get to keep what you make. Mm-hmm. That made, we were really nervous about that, but people responded well to it. And so we're going to go forward with that. And I think our Anime Track, I want it to be something different from everyone else's Anime Track. I've been to tons of different anime conventions now, and so many of them are the same. Large dealers areas, some anime screening,
right.
Usually a gigantic party at the end of the night. Well, I don't want to be party con. I don't want to do that. I want to be with anime the same way we are with gaming. With gaming, I feel like we're true to our roots. We focus on gaming. We don't do guests. We don't do any of the auction-y stuff. We don't do any of that. We focus on gaming and the love of that hobby. I want anime to be the same way. I want us to focus on the roots of anime, which are the movies and the fans, and let them express, you know, their love for that hobby. Anime is, believe it or not, become a hobby. More than just people that sit around and watch the boob tube. You know, it truly is. There's a hobby that has evolved from this, from the fans that love anime. So we want to try to be true to our roots and really focus on costuming and helping people to learn how to costume. Those people that want to get into it, we want to give them a way to do that. We want to give them a stepping stone into, if they're really, really feeling that they want to get more into that hobby, we want to provide them with that access in a way that is affordable, that they don't have to spend $5,000 on a costume or, you know, some crazy amount of money,
right,
or crazy amount of time to build a costume. And we've got some great experts in Ruby and in Maggie that can help people that want to get into that hobby. I think it's going to be big. And again, it's not something that we're, you know, year one, we're not putting up some gigantic number of, well, we got to have 1,000 people or it's going away. You know, we set a realistic goal, and hopefully the year after that, we'll have even more. I think that's a realistic goal.
Yeah.
Considering that our gaming is growing by 100 people a year.
So
we did 2, 3, and now over 400 people in year 3. I think we'll do over 500 people in year 4. And if we get 40 people in anime, I think we're in great shape going into year 6. And I believe that we may even get 2 or 3 dozen people just in the Widow's Track alone. And that's a labor of love. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's really what Scarab's all about. It's a labor of love for the hobby that we all enjoy.
Yeah.
So in one way or another, you know, our wives may not be gamers, but they enjoy.
But they enjoy all this.
But they enjoy sitting and listening and the crafts and stuff that they do. And so that kind of goes hand in hand with gaming. So.
Yeah. And I admit, I've seen some gamers actually look over there going, oh, I want to do some of that Widow's Track stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And just to clarify, anybody can really sign up for that.
That's correct.
It doesn't matter if you're a gamer
or a
gamer widow.
Yeah, we're not looking for cards that say, I'm not a gamer, right? Exactly. Anyone can sign up for it. Because a lot of people wanted to do the chain mailing.
Right.
That was a big one.
Or the chocolate truffle thing.
Yeah, the chocolate truffle thing was pretty popular, too.
Imagine that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, we're making some chocolate over here. Oh, I think I'm a gamer's widow now.
Yeah. Our kids track is huge. We get so many compliments on our kids track. We've talked to a lot of other conventions and seen how they do their kids tracks, and people that participate in ours really, really have said a lot of good things about it. They like the idea that an adult can't play in the game.
Right. Yeah.
It's not a drop-in. It's not a daycare, you know, but so mom and dad have to be around, or we have to at least know where they are. But the way our convention is, it lends itself to being able to see mom and dad at all times.
Right.
And Liz, who is the runs our kids track, she just does a phenomenal job with the programming of that of that setup. And the kids love it. The kids absolutely love it.
Oh, it does. Yeah.
So and you know, a lot of kids tracks, you don't see kids tracks run by kids, and that's one of the things that our kids track really lends itself to as well. So we have Liz and several other adults that will run games for the kids track, but then our kids track is gaming for kids by kids, and kids GMs running those games, and you know, like I said, they just have a great time.
And I feel bad sometimes because like with my Cobalt's Cave, because I have such outrageous stuff on the table,
right?
It tends to attract kids, which I'm kind of okay with to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
but honestly, it's kind of one of these. Well, this game is like a kids game for people who aren't kids anymore.
right. Well, and that's why, you know, there's a lot of games that are like that are kind of humor-based games or people end up having a really extra good time in, but they are not kids games.
They're not kids games.
You know, they're not kids games. And so that's why we do the rating system. That's why we came up with the rating system.
Which is a good thing.
And that's made a world of difference for us, you know. So that's worked out great.
Oh, yeah. So are there any other just kind of last second shout-outs or things you want to say?
I would say that we at Scarab owe a lot of people a lot of thanks. You know, we owe a tremendous amount of thanks to our sponsors. I think our sponsors are the greatest sponsors in the world. They've stuck with us from year one. from year zero when we first came up with this idea that of what we were going to do. We were going to be this traveling group that goes around the Southeast, not necessarily demoing any one single game, but demoing all the games. And it eventually, we were going to have this convention that paid for all of our travels. And, you know, companies looked at us like we were nuts. So we've had sponsors and like Chessex, you know, everyone loves the dice. And I'll give a specific shout out to Chessex. The Scarab colors are fantastic. They've stuck with us from day one. They were our first sponsor that we picked up. They've been with us from the beginning. They've have always given us, you know, the best product that I feel like everyone wants, it, which is that dice. You know, we show up and people want those dice, and people are copying the dice. So we know that the dice, that the Chessex dice works, you know. So yeah, we owe a great deal of gratitude to all of our sponsors, not just Chessex, but all of our sponsors. You know, Paizo really takes care of me when it comes to the Pathfinder Society. You know, God bless. The retailers in the area are absolutely phenomenal. And our retailers that are, you know, from Charlotte to Myrtle Beach to Asheville, down through Georgia, from Savannah and Augusta, and then Charleston, and then, of course, the retailers in Lexington and Columbia, you know, they do a great job of getting the word out. We'll be doing an event in a retailer, and the people there will have heard about Scarab, but they haven't heard about other conventions in the area that have been here for 20 years, you know. Wow. And that's amazing to us that, you know, here we are in year four, and there are people that know about us everywhere, and then we mention a convention that we're going to that's been around for 20 years, and people are like, I've never heard of that. Where's that at? So we owe that to our retailers and then to the fans, the people that come to the convention, and the people that can't make it, to the convention, but know us from retailer events. You know, there are a lot of people that we run into at retailer events that have not been able to come to a Scarab, and you know, we love seeing them at the retailer events, and they're great. So if it wasn't for the hard work of everyone, not just with Scarab, we wouldn't be where we're at today, that's for sure. So, yeah, huge, huge thanks to everyone.
All right, well, again, I was talking with Dale Collins.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for talking with me. Looking forward to all sorts of exciting things from Scarab Gaming Convention in 2014.
And now, Loot Balls.
Interested in volunteering for Scarab? Go to Scarab's website and click on the Gaming tab to learn about the special GM and volunteer discounts. Volunteering 15 hours gets you the Tier 3 badge discount of $25. Volunteering 25 hours gets you into Tier 2, which comes with a free badge, Scarab t-shirt, and a $5 food per diem at the cantina. Volunteering 35 hours gets you into Tier 3, which includes the free badge, the free t-shirt, the $5 food per diem, one quarter of a hotel room for the convention, and a special gift, $30 in value. Now remember, this is a 4-day convention, so this is quite a deal. Okay, so we're at the end of the episode. We had a really great chat with Dale Collins. A lot of information, a lot of really funny stories, a lot of good stuff coming out of Dale Collins and coming from Scarab this year. Please go to the website, the Scarab website, and get more information about the convention. Check out the updated calendar of events. I can't stress how important that is, because it just seems like they're just adding stuff constantly. Please send us some feedback via Facebook. There's going to be an email address that you'll be able to email us if you want to. I want to know what you guys think of this. If there's anything else you want to hear on the podcast, if there's anybody else you want to hear of from the Swarm, anybody else you want me to interview. Anyways, before I go, I'd like to give one final shout out to Scarab for letting me do this. If only they knew what they were getting into. Mwahaha. And of course, I want to give the biggest shout out to my wife. Thank you for being there for me. I love you. And a big shout out to MC Lars for giving me permission to use pretty much all of his music on our Swarmcast. You guys should go check him out, mclars.com. And on that note, I'm going to let MC Lars take us out. This is John Manis again, your host. I will see all of you later. I broke through.
through the carbonate, that's how I got free. Jabba back off because there's no stopping me. Postmodern player, sample-tastic, flows ekphrastic, I get drastic. Hey, watch the plastic, yo, I name check and leave you drowned in space, ooh black. Player of the future, watch me go. Sith girls scream when they hear my flow. These alien chicks reproduce with spores, so I go where no MC has gone before. Hey Fry, look, we can still be friends. I won't ask Leela out again. Sci-fi, I try, I fly solo. Shoot your land speeder up just like Bolo.
What's with Lars and what's with his name?
Never mind that ish, cause I got space game. Darth Maul can't stop me,
I'm on fire tonight.
Boba Fett can't stop me, I'm on fire tonight. Vader can't stop me,
I'm on fire tonight.
Space player blowing up like dynamite. Dr. Smith can't stop me,
I'm on fire tonight.
Q can't stop me, I'm on fire tonight. Even hell can't stop me,
I'm on fire tonight.
Because I've got space game and it feels alright.
2112, all the players play on. Everyone bumps Rush in that Tom Sawyer song. I took the red pill and high-five Neo. Hey, what should I sample?
If it sells, big deal.
Yo, Morpheus, look, you're a real cyberpunk. But your friend Trinity has junk in the trunk.